Hey, welcome into A Tribe Called Dad. We're excited to have you. This is a bit rare for us, but today we welcome in a non-dad guest on the show, Susan L. Combs. Susan is the president of a successful insurance company based out of New York, but she's here today because she recently published a book called Pancakes for Roger, A Mentorship Guide for Slaying Dragons, where she compiled all of the great wisdom and advice that she had received from her father, Roger, over the years. So in a lot of ways, we actually have Roger Combs on the show today. Major General Roger E. Combs served our great country for 39 years in three different branches of the military, and was also a lawyer and a judge in Missouri. This book, Pancakes for Roger, memorializes Roger and is a great part of his legacy. And without further ado, let's jump right in. Welcome in. We've got Susan L. Combs, who is joining us, and I let her know right before this that she's one of the few non-dads that we have had on the podcast, and so we're honored to have you, Susan.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you making the exception for me, for sure.
Well, I think it's an important exception to make simply because of the new project that you have. You have this book that you've recently released called Pancakes for Roger, A Mentorship Guide for Slaying Dragons. And really, this is advice from your father that you've memorialized and put into this book. And you've made mention to the fact that you had such a great relationship with your father, and this was information that you wanted to pass on and to share with others. And so we're excited to get a chance to really, in some ways, this is almost like an interview with Roger through you to some degree. But I would love for you to talk a little bit about the origin of this project, how this came about.
Yep. So, you know, I grew up in a small town in Missouri, 986 people. I mean, I live in New York City now. There's more people in my building than I have in my hometown. But I was, you know, I was raised by a great man. And my father was a two-star general. He was also a civilian judge. He was, you know, a board member, Joint Chiefs of Staff member, you know, mentor, confidant. I mean, just you name it, it was pretty much on his resume. And he and I were definitely the two type A people in our family. So we always kind of had a good way of communicating. We were very, very close. And unfortunately, he passed away of Agent Orange related throat cancer. In August, it'll be 4 years since he's passed. Yeah. And I had a lot of people that approached me to write a book several times, and I just kind of kicked it, you know, down the road and said it wasn't the right time, And but after my dad passed, I think it was a way for me to, it was a very cathartic, project. And, you know, kind of the premise behind Pancakes for Roger started out with a simple request that ended up being a movement, to raise money for the University of Missouri Veterans Clinic that provides free legal services for veterans and their families navigating the VA claims and appeals process. And, kind of how the story goes is, you know, I moved back to Missouri to help care for my dad. And when he was on hospice, he had a feeding tube and he was also on oxygen. And we had a pretty regimented schedule that we followed every single morning because he and I were the type A people. And I would go to the gym in the morning. I'd check on him before I left. I would come back. I'd check on him again. If he was good, I'd go shower, come down, get him rallied around, help him with his tube feeding breakfast and get him in the chair for the day. Mm. But one morning he beat me to the table and I came in from showering and I went to his hospital bed and he wasn't there. And so I rounded the corner to the kitchen and he was there with a placemat and setting his table. And I looked at him and I said, well, you know, Dad, what are you doing? And he said, well, I want pancakes for breakfast. And it just literally broke my heart. Because this great man that I just idolized, you know, the one thing he was asking for, so simple, was something I couldn't give him. And I looked at him, I said, oh, Dad, you know, I said, we got a feeding tube, we have a DNR, we're on hospice. I was like, if I give you pancakes and you choke, we're done here. And I just don't think we're quite ready to be done yet. And he looked at me and he said, "Oh yes, I can." He said, "Matt said I could." And Matt is my brother and he's a nurse and he wasn't there that morning.
Right.
So I knew we were dealing with some confusion from low oxygen levels. So I said, "Let me see what I can do." And I went and I heated up his, feeding tube formula for 14 seconds, because that's what the general always wanted. Never 16, never 12. It had to be 14 on the dot. And I brought it over and I put it on the table and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, there's your syrup." And so his oxygen levels kind of started rallying around and he understood what I was telling him. And he said, "Okay." And so, you know, a few weeks later, he passed away. And I took one day off work when I came back from New York and my husband said, "Why don't we go have some pancakes for your dad?" And so that's kind of where the whole movement of Pancakes for Roger started. So my husband snapped a picture. We told the story on social media. And I said, "If you're so inclined, why don't you go have some pancakes for Roger to appreciate the little things in life?" Because we all know that our lives can change in a blink of an eye. And you can lose out on just enjoying something simple, just like a, you know, a stack of pancakes.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of exploded from there. I never anticipated what would happen, but a lot of people started having pancakes and they started using the hashtag Pancakes for Roger. And so what we decided to do is the month of February, because his birthday was on February 22nd, is for every pancake loving picture we got on social media, on public facing profiles using the hashtag, my company would make a donation to the University of Missouri Veterans Clinic in his honor. So the book came out on his birthday this year. So it was 2/22/22. So if you believe in numerologies, right, that's a big angel number. And so this year, the campaign, we got the most pictures ever, but we hit all 50 states and 18 countries.
Wow. And,
yeah, it's been great. It's really, really been great. And so I get a lot of people, even like after February, you know, I still get pancakes pictures about every week. And so we still, you know, use some on social media, but a lot of people say, I can't have pancakes now and not think about your dad and right, take a minute to pause and appreciate my life and all the things that I have in it. So that makes me feel good, because my dad was one of those guys that was good when nobody was watching. And
right,
so many people came out and just told stories about my dad after he passed. And that's so gratifying as a child. And, you know, I'm in my 40s. I lost my dad in my 30s and I didn't anticipate losing my dad then. I know a lot of people lost their fathers and their mothers for that matter at a much younger age, but I wasn't ready yet for sure. And so having that experience and having other people come and share stories with me, it makes me remember to do that for other people. And because anytime I know that somebody's had a parent that's lost or somebody close, I try, if I have a story that I can relate to them and explain how much that person meant to me, I take the opportunity because I know how much it means now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's such a beautiful story. And I don't know how anybody could listen to that and not start getting emotional. You had me over here tearing up a bit. And now, I mean, of course, when I see pancakes now, you've altered the way that I see pancakes now, too. I want to ask, because obviously I can tell from your, obviously from the book, but also from the way that you speak of your dad, that you just had such a great relationship with him. And, you know, talk about, like, I guess from a child's perspective, specifically from a daughter's perspective, like, what did he do to, like, create that bond? And was it something, like, I feel like there's certainly a special father-daughter relationship that's just, like, that's just nature, that's, like, built in. And it's almost like my job as a father to continue to foster that and to continue to nurture that. But I would love to hear, like, from your firsthand experience, like, if there are things that you can pinpoint that you're like, yes, when he did this, or as he, when he talked to me in this particular way, or the way that he handled X, Y, or Z, I'd just be curious if there's any things that stand out for you.
Well, I think personality wise, we were very similar. My dad always said I had my head in the game. Like, we would do a lot of projects together. He would, you know, go to ask me for a hammer and I'd be standing there with one in my hand. So I always we had kind of that interconnectedness. But, you know, I think a lot for my dad is, you know, I grew up in a town of less than 1,000 people. And a lot of times people just stay there. And, you know, my father was a 2-star general. My mother was a travel agent. And even though I think my dad would have been thrilled if I would have married a local guy and bought, you know, Rufus Limp's old yellow house with the part, you know, the porch swing that I just loved ever since I was a little kid. He told me he'd help me buy horses, you know, when I got older and stuff like that. But my dad showed me the world. And he let me know that it was okay to go out and explore the world. But if I wanted to come back home, there was no shame in that. So I think that that was one of the things that he just, my dad was very realistic with me, but he also, and I'm very much a realist, but he just let me know that the skies were the limit. And he never told me that there wasn't anything I couldn't do, but he was also gave me, you know, my dad and I, we always said, you know, give me the Reader's Digest version of it, because one of my brothers and my brother can be very long winded when it comes to stories. And my dad and I were always like, you know, cut the bullshit and let's get to the point. Yeah. So that was something that we always just kind of got through, where I'll be like, hey, can I bounce this idea off you? So my dad was very methodical. He was very, you know, 30,000 foot view. But I think that he was just also a good example. Mm-hmm. And I think that's huge, because I know not everybody has a great dad. I mean, I'll be right. The first to admit that. I mean, I have friends that have horrible fathers, and you know, but
or non-existent fathers.
Absolutely. But you know what? You have the ability to create a chosen family at any given time. And I have a wonderful chosen family in addition to my blood family. And I have a lot of people. And, you know, one of the things too, that since my dad mentored a lot of people and he was very much involved in his community, I have kind of a community of dads that kind of look out for me now that he's no longer here. Mm-hmm. So I have those guys in different kind of categories of my life that if I need to, I mean, hell, when I need to sell a Winnebago, you know, after my dad passed, when I need to do an auction, when I need to do different things, I know who to call and say, okay, tell me what my dad would say. Like, what, you know, what's the dad advice here? So I think that's good to be able to surround yourself with those right people too, because you never know when you're going to have to tap them in.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. 100%. And you know, I think this world is so connected in that way, you know, and it's important to build your tribe and to, you know, also participate in that as well. So when we talk about the process of writing this book, and you mentioned that it was this incredibly cathartic process. What was the hardest part?
Oh, I ugly cried every freaking week. You know, yeah, I mean, it just,
I bet.
And I think for me, I mean, so I've definitely stepped into my dad's shoes, I would say, for the most part in my family role. So I'm the fixer. I'm the go-to person to give you just kind of the bottom line advice, the dad advice, because our thought process was so similar. So my dad was never supposed to be the book. My dad was supposed to be a chapter. And because when I publicly speak, I've always ended with like unsolicited advice that are quotes from different mentors that I've gotten along the way, but my dad took over the whole freaking book. And which is a great thing. And so then it's also sprinkled with other, you know, messages and from different mentors I've had too, but I would say the majority of it is definitely Roger Combs. And so I think for me, just going through the process, because you know, I mean, the first couple of weeks after he was gone, I mean, I logged 14 hours on the phone with the VA, with Arlington, with the Department of Defense, you know, just coordinating all these different things for my family. And so I think I just got into fixer mode on things, and I didn't get to do a lot of the healing process right after he passed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, I don't know if your father's living or not, but it's like the first year, I think you're kind of numb. Mm-hmm. And then the second year is almost harder because you're like, oh, this is what my life is going to be now. And right. So, you know, year three is actually when I was in the process of year three when I wrote the book, and I think I was ready to. So I think that those are the things that I didn't anticipate the healing nature of this. And I'm so glad I did, because right. it's helped so many. And I've had, you know, I was sharing with you before we started that I've had a lot of dads that have come up to me that have said, I'm going to use this as a guide to raise a strong daughter. I'm going right. to, you know, use this as a guide to raise a strong kid, because it's such great information. And, you know, I was always raised that if you get a good idea or good advice, it's your duty to share it with somebody else, because if it helped you, it could probably help somebody else too.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's actually a really great nugget that you just dropped there, because I feel like there are times where, you know, we're surrounded by so much information these days, and you know, it's easy to be bombarded by that, but a lot of that information that you are, you know, grabbing is actually good information that you're then putting to use, and you're learning something. And sometimes, you know, mentorship is a really interesting thing, and mentorship and fatherhood, I mean, you know, they are sort of very similar in a lot of ways. I feel like, you know, as a mentor, it is a lot of times people feel like they
Like, well, what do I have? I'm not an expert in this space. I don't know if I can offer advice to somebody else. And it's like, well, no, you have this unique perspective that you have. You're living life. Like, you got over that little hill or whatever that was. Like, that could help somebody. And yeah, I think it's important to be able to share that information with other people. And that honestly is the premise of our work on A Tribe Called Dad, is us as dads being able to share, hey, here's where I won, here's where I messed up. Take it for what it is. Hopefully you can learn from something here. Maybe, do it differently or, figure out what works for you with your kids, but every kid is going to be a bit different too, So,
Well, I had an uncle. My uncle Joe always. So when my mom had my brother, everybody was giving her advice, and my uncle Joe told my mom. He said, "You know what, Gloria? Just take what you want and throw out the rest." I mean, it's just because it's so true. Because it's not everything's going to work for everybody, and
No.
so I think it's okay to be like, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to pass on that information. That's not going to work for me right now." But I think when because I mentor a lot too, and when people tell me like, how do I know when I'm ready to be a mentor? I always say, if somebody says, "Hey, can I pick your brain about something?" or "Hey, can I bounce something off you?" I'm like, you're a mentor now. Like, you've
Yeah.
made it to the class. So, because apparently you're doing something in your life that people think that, "Hey, I want to emulate," or how can I do what they're doing?" or "What made them do that versus this?" type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I think like that's a really great sign. That's a really great sign that you are now entering that mentor class for sure. With this book and putting out this book, what was the, I guess what was the most, what were you surprised about, like in putting this book out? Were there any like things that came out of this through this process that you're just like, wow, I was surprised. I didn't expect that this would be a byproduct of writing this book.
So the veterans community really embraced me on this. And I mean, I've been around the military. I mean, my father served for 39 years and 4 months. I mean, he was a lifer for sure. And so the veterans community really embraced me and took me under their wing. And one of the really cool things that I hadn't anticipated is people reaching out to me. I was interviewed the first week the book came out on Veterans Radio. And I had a guy that reached out to me that my father had mentored when he was a young pilot. He was an F-16 pilot.
Wow.
And my dad had given him some advice. And then this guy went on to be a flight instructor. And he said, "The advice that your dad gave me, it was there's rocks in the clouds. So when you're a pilot, you never know what's in the clouds because so you have to kind of plan for worst case scenario and you have to be able to react when something happens." And so he said that every single class I taught got that advice from your dad. And so things like that, I think, are so cool. I mean, even just the people that used to work with my dad that have reached out to me that maybe I've met when I was a little girl, maybe I haven't. I've had people that are like take the time to even like write pen to paper letters, like not even an email. Like they're just like really taking the time to, go to a post office, put a stamp on something. I mean, that's saying something these days. So that kind of outreach, and also too, I mean, I was just very basic when it came to the goals for this. I wanted to help five people and I wanted to bring more notoriety to the Veterans Clinic. And so the Veterans Clinic have had a banner year on donations, which to me, like, okay, that helps check that box. And I've just had so many people that have reached out that, maybe they were caregivers in the past, or I think a lot of times if somebody hasn't been a caregiver, like it or not, it's probably going to be in your future. And so, and it can be caregiving for children, it can be caregiving for parents or siblings or things like that. And so, a lot of this stuff is also advice on just have those hard conversations. Because, not that I did everything right, but I did a lot of things right on this. And so I had a lot of the information I had. So when it was time for my dad to move over, I wasn't left with nothing. Like I didn't, because I mean, I'll tell you, with several bank accounts and eight properties, I mean, there was a lot of work to do. And so at least I mean, I have spreadsheets of my father that we sat down and went through things and went through and said, "Who's the plumber, Dad? Who's the electrician?
And
Who?"
when did you do that in the timeline of things? Like when he started to get sick is when you started to do that, or what was this happening way before that?
So my dad was diagnosed with Agent Orange related throat cancer in 2008. So we had about 10 relatively good years, but the last year of his life, he relapsed twice. So after he relapsed the first time, he was going to have, he did have a major surgery, and we didn't know if he was going to be able to speak after that. So that was the first time my dad and I sat down. He passed away in August, and this was the June prior, so almost a year before. He and I sat down and spreadsheeted everything. I mean, even from like, my father, you know, he was an expert marksman. And so, you know, there was firearms and things like that to deal with. And so he told me who to talk to for that. He told me who was going to be my go-to person for VA questions. So I had all that information. And then when he relapsed the second time, he and I sat down again, just to kind of clarify some information and go through things and make sure that we had. But I mean, it's like, it's the freaking passwords and stuff like that. I'm so glad I had passwords. Right. I mean, those are the things that you don't even think about. And when you're going through grief and, you know, anticipating a loss like that, sometimes you're so stuck in the grief that you can't see straight and you can't. And so I'm so grateful that I could put that aside for a few hours to be able to get the finding information I needed. I mean, there's still things that I miss that I was like, God, I wish he was here and I could just ask that question. But then that's when I tap one of those other dads and say like, hey, here's my situation. How would you handle this? How do you think my dad would handle this type of thing?
Yeah. I love the practical, this topic, because I think it's incredibly practical when we were talking about this. We had a recent episode with another dad talking about just, you know, preparing for emergencies and things like that. And just as a dad, as a parent, as a human being who's responsible for other people, just like being prepared in these particular ways. And like, you're getting my wheels turning even of just like, you know, this is a great thing for people to prepare for just overall, like to be able to keep your affairs in some sort of an order and to be able to have somebody that you trust and say, hey, here's the master key to this. In case anything happens, here's where it's all, you know, stored, and even be more proactive about it on our side. I mean, you know, we live in a world now where this is certainly possible. You know, you can create like a shared spreadsheet, and like that can exist now. You know, incredibly fascinating. And I'm really excited for this book. I do need to ask you one more thing before we have you do a top three, which is I need to ask you about the dragons.
Oh, the dragons.
Yeah, what's up with the dragons? I mean, it seems like it's so that they don't go together, but I would love for your interpretation of this.
I fought for this title. So, you know, it started out, you know, Pancakes for Roger, a mentorship guide for life. And then I freaking woke up at like 2 a.m. and I was like, freaking dragons. We need to slay some freaking dragons. I'm being clean on my vocabulary, because I'm a swearer, you know? And I was like, I know there's dads, probably not kids, but I don't know. I'll keep it clean. But, and so I woke up at 2 a.m. And I was just like, you know, cause there's like just obstacles, right? Or dragons. Like there's always problems. There's always mountains to climb and things like that. So I'm like, there's dragons to slay. So it was so funny because I shared this story so then I tried the title out on my friends, because, you know, my publisher and things like that, like when I said, you know, mentorship guide for slaying dragons, they're like, Susan, I don't know. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I was like, you don't know me completely yet. I was like, once you really know me, you know, this is me. And so then I tried it out with some of my friends, and I have a girlfriend named Kat Thomas that she's an amazing attorney. She does, she's an attorney for, victims of sexual violence. So like Catholic Church, Boy Scouts, like Weinstein, think of that stuff. It's crazy. But so I told her the title and she's like, can I swear?
Can you swear? Yeah. Go ahead.
She's like motherfucking dragon. She's like, Susan, when I was graduating high school, she said the superintendent was like giving the speech and he was just like, you know, you guys might want to go slay some dragons, but why don't you start with lizards first? And she said, I'm sitting there saying, I'm not going to slay a stupid lizard. I'm slay a fucking dragon. So like when I told her this, she's like, yes, right.
Hit home for her.
Like, after that, I was like, okay, that's the title. That's it. That's
confirmation right then and there.
Yeah. I was like, that's good feedback.
I love it. You know, we want to encourage everybody to go check that out. Pancakes for Roger. I can't actually leave out your actual title. Pancakes for Roger, a guide, right? Well, let me have you do it so I don't butcher it.
Pancakes for Roger, a mentorship guide for slaying dragons.
A mentorship guide for slaying dragons. Thank you very much. Make sure to go and check that out. But we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. Susan is going to give us a top three based on top three pieces of advice that she's gotten through her father. And so don't go anywhere. We'll see you in just a minute.
A Tribe Called Dad. This is the top three.
It's the top three.
It's the top three.
This is the top three.
All right, we are back with Susan Combs, who has written this book, Pancakes for Roger, a mentorship guide for slaying dragons. And she is here, and we are doing a top three. And this is top three pieces of advice that you've gotten from your father, Roger Combs. And I'm going to let you just roll with it. So here we go. Number one.
Drive the car. So, I grew up in a rural community, and so we're all driving at a much younger age. But when it comes to highway driving, you know, my dad was a combat helicopter pilot. And so driving on the highway, he would always say that you could be the best driver in the world, but you have to be concerned about the people around you. And with where I grew up, you also had to be worried if you popped over a hill, you could hit an Amish or hit a, you know, farm equipment or hit a horse or a cow or something like that. So he always had this methodical drive the car. So he would literally jerk the steering wheel. So you have to go off the road and you had to remember to keep your composure, take your foot off the gas and just like coast down and then get your composure and come back on, you know, the road. So my brothers have this too. I mean, so anytime we're driving now and something goes awry, we're always like, drive the car. So that became really a metaphor just in my life for keeping things simple. So sometimes when we have a project in front of us, we could be just, you know, paralyzed because it seems so big. But yes, if you just take it into like bite-sized nuggets and say, okay, let me start with step one first. And then it's like a drive the car method. And then also too, when things go crazy, I mean, when my dad was sick, I mean, our house was a freaking pharmacy. And so, you know, there was one day that my dad got confused because his oxygen level was low and he took his nighttime meds in the day. And so the drive the car message from that was like, okay, we're putting all the freaking meds away and only putting out what he's allowed to take at the time so that there's no, you know, we don't have to worry about that stuff. So drive the car has just been such a simple thing that anytime I'm working on a project or things go crazy, I'm like, okay, stop, Susan, just drive the car. So,
right. Just drive the car. I love that. All right, here we go. Number two
is there's three aspects of your life. There's the place that you live, the thing that you do for a living, and the person that you're with. My dad used to say, if you're, you know, happy with three out of the three, you're living a golden life. Even if you're happy with two out of the three, you're still doing pretty good. But if you're happy with none or one, then get off your ass and do something about it because only you can do something about it.
So good. All right. Give us number three.
Number three
is one of my favorites. My dad always said, it's important for you to be understood, but it's more important for you not to be misunderstood. So I use that a lot. I work a lot as an expert witness. And so I have to put things into layman's terms, not talking legal jargon. You don't have to act like you're putting on airs by using big words. Just keep things simple because then you don't have to worry about people not understanding what you're talking about.
And that actually is also so true when it comes to raising kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, all of this stuff, but like, you know, I think specifically that hits home for me too, as like, you know, when you're speaking to young kids, you know, really be able to communicate so that that isn't misunderstood. This book is packed with all sorts of these. So if you're enjoying this top three right now, there's many, many more chapters that exist inside of Pancakes for Roger. And I highly recommend going out and checking that out. Susan L. Combs, thank you so much for joining us here on A Tribe Called Dad. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Take care. Bye. Thank you, everybody.
Dads are better than moms. Dads better than moms.
Dads are better than mommy. Sorry.